Everyone, it's another edition of the One Board Podcast. This is Rick White, and I'm here not only with a superhero in the making, but also his partner in crime, and some would say the real brains behind the operation. Joining us is Ryan, as usual, and this week, Erin, his wife. Yay!
Woohoo! Hello.
I'm kind of like, do you remember Krang from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Oh, most certainly.
I'm the body. Erin's the brains.
Oh, I love that. That was fantastic. That's the best analogy we've had on here. That's definitely the best.
Well, it is gross. She's that gross pink looking.
Whoa, thanks. That's really disgusting.
we started off by calling her gross. All right, welcome to the podcast. Yay. I actually got to see you guys this past weekend.
That's right. Really, we got fun to hang out for a little while and talk about podcasts and play some games. It was a lot of fun because we were able to fit in as many games as we could in just a couple of hours. And it was a nice little gaming weekend.
Even though it made you guys delirious at one point.
Almost certainly.
Which was captured on YouTube.
Yes.
We were very tired.
I posted later, I should never allow things that I've done after midnight to be posted online.
Well, you watched it a couple times. I feel like that was your greatest moment.
Yeah, yeah, most certainly.
So, Rick, we went to, before we get into the topic of the show, I want to tell you that we went to Ollie's, what is it, a junk store? It's Ollie's...
Like a closeout store, buyout store type of...
Yeah, it's a lot worse than Big Lots.
Yeah.
And so we went to Ollie's, and there were actually some pretty decent games, board games, sitting on the shelves. And so we picked up, let me look. Oh, it's WWE Showdown, the WWE-licensed game from Gale Force 9. Have you heard of it?
I have never heard of that. I thought you were talking about a video game for a second.
No. So this is a game about programming your wrestlers and taking on other wrestlers. You actually team up into, you could play either two one-person teams, two-person teams, or two-three-person teams. And I was actually introduced to this on another podcast, heard them talk about it. They said that they really, really enjoyed it, and they were really shocked. And when I saw it for like $9, I was like, I have to own this.
What a find.
Yeah, yeah. So next up, I'll be backyard wrestling and baby cage fighting soon enough.
Yeah, I hate it when that happens. So what are we doing this week? What's our discussion about this week, Ryan?
So this week we're going to be talking about kids games that don't suck, because when I was growing up, there were only a couple good games. And when I think back to my childhood, there was this game called Hi-Ho Cheerio. And I remember playing it with some people that I got to know through my mom's work. And it was the worst game ever. I remember thinking, how is this actually a game?
That is a good point. For some reason, I have pleasant memories of it, but I'm guessing all of those memories. I think the only happy memories I really have are just realizing that there were enough cherries to actually play the game that they hadn't been lost.
That's true. So, Erin, do you have any terrible child game memories?
Well, I might make some enemies here, but I think Monopoly is probably mentioned a lot, but it bored me to tears because it lasted forever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it just lost my attention. And so when we talk about kids' games that don't suck, you really have to look for games that hold a kid's attention.
Right. They used to buy us, like, Risk when we were little, and you're like, what? Now, like, knowing what I know, it's like, what do you do about a kid Risk? Like, we don't know what we're doing? Like,
right.
That's true. That's very true. World domination, what every seven-year-old wants.
Yeah, some of the games, when you think about some of the games that became popular as a kid, like, Life makes sense, and, you know, I guess Chutes and Ladders, and, you know, Scrabble's not horrible, but, like, you know, some stuff that's been going around the internet is how we've all been playing Monopoly wrong. And they're like, if you think about it, it's got like an auction mechanic and it's got like a worker placement almost. And it's got an economy engine going. And it's like, really, that's a very complicated game. And they were like, here, children, enjoy yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I actually, even though Monopoly gets a bad rap, I actually liked Monopoly growing up. I didn't have these terrible experiences. Yes, it lasted a long time. Yes, it took a while. And it was boring at times. But I think when you play with the right amount of people, that are a little bit cutthroat, it's actually a fun game. It's like anything else. The audience is going to make whether or not the game is good.
Well, I would play with my siblings and my cousins, and then they would just get so bored, they would just leave. And so you really didn't have an option, you know, whether you would finish or not.
That's true. That's true.
One game I really enjoyed as a kid was Battleship. That's I love to play Battleship.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Underrated Battleship.
Yeah. Well, we if we want a better version of Battleship, Sonar. Sonar is a really fun 2v2, almost Battleship killer in my mind. I played this during Thanksgiving with Aaron's uncle and who else was there?
My Kendall cousin's husband.
And your cousin's husband. Yeah, fiance. Mm-hmm. It was really fun. We had a great time. And it was definitely, it's way better than Battleship. Sonar. Yeah. So let's get into some of these kids' games. There's this game that we really like. It's a dexterity game called Dr. Eureka. Essentially, it's a game where you're taking these test tubes and you're dropping marbles from one test tube to another, trying to find combinations and trying to make them... it's almost like a puzzle, a little puzzle. Everybody's playing at the same time, up to four players, and everybody's trying to solve the puzzle first to grab the card from the center of the table. That one is really fun. That's one of those games that... It's for 7, 8, 9 years old,
right.
But when you get a group of adults in there, I mean, some of the most fun times with that game was when we had a bunch of 20 and 30 somethings mm-hmm. playing the game around the table, laughing, yelling, screaming at each other.
It's actually a lot more difficult than what you would think. I mean, it's colorful and it's dexterity. It's fun. It moves pretty fast, but at the same time, it is the level of difficulty is really there. So
it is. It is.
Yeah. Yeah, I have not gotten a chance to get my hands on that one yet, but I definitely want to give it a shot. It looks kind of fun, and you guys have talked a lot about it. Speaking of dexterity games, one that I know we saw, I think, for the first time at Atlanta Game Fest, and I know you guys have gotten your hands on it since then, is Ice Cool.
Yes, we have really enjoyed playing Ice Cool as a family. It's really interactive. The box is really neat because you actually have five boxes, one nestled inside of the other, so the board game is actually not that big in the package, but then when you break it out and you put your link your boxes together, it becomes a pretty big it takes up a pretty big amount of space. So
it's fun because it's a dexterity game, but even if you're bad at it, it's not that it's still fun. It's still a lot of fun.
The thing is, you have room to improve because you have a little penguin. Everybody has a little colorful penguin. And you're trying to flick your penguin in a certain way to go under a doorway so that you can capture the fish. And you want to capture three fish. And it actually, you can get better at it. You can improve. And you see other players making really cool shots, like Ryan. One time he flicked it up over the doorway, and that was really awesome. And the kids went crazy, and he talked about it for a few days. And so it was definitely a big moment in our house, and it was a lot of fun.
I think I saw it on SportsCenter that week, if I recall correctly.
It was their top five.
Yeah.
No big deal.
So. Yeah.
Red Penguin goes over the arch. So
definitely.
And it's fun because while you're waiting to take your turn, talking about, you know, why kids would enjoy this game, while you're waiting to take your turn, you're so engrossed in what the other player is doing and how they're doing it that it just sort of makes you excited and it keeps your attention. And our kids just love it. They get excited. They stand up. They don't really sit in the chairs. They stand up and they like to look over the edge of the little penguin school wall to see, you know, what your player's going to do. So it's a lot of fun.
That's right. Speaking of keeping people's attention, Rick, I told you about a game, and I told you that it was a difficult game, and you and myself and two of our friends, we played it, and we got stomped out because you guys didn't take me seriously because you thought it was a kid's game.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
That was Ghostbusters Protect the Barrier, which is a remake of a game called Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters, or it might be Ghost Fightin'. With no G and an apostrophe, because, you know, that means it's more intense. But yes, I have reviewed Ghostbusters, the board game, in the past, which is quite a complex game. Kind of reminds me of like a Zombicide. It's a like missions based and you're playing four characters. And so I was like, you know, I've played Ghostbusters, the board game, like Ghostbusters Protect the Barrier. This is childish. And we played it and I cried because no, it was very tough. I mean, it's a cooperative game, kind of like a Flashpoint Fire Rescue is one that comes to mind when I think about it, but where you're all, you know, in the Ghostbusters version, you're all Ghostbusters trying to go around to collect. I can't remember what it is you're trying to collect.
You're collecting these little orbs there. I'm trying to remember. They're like paranormal devices or something like
yes.
that.
Yes. It's not super clear. Well, it might be in the rules, but, you know, really you're trying to defeat the ghosts and not die. And
right.
So the ghosts all show up way too much and they will drive you crazy. But I think it's set up in a way to where you can still get the kids involved. It's not, you know, especially for like a cooperative game. I think sometimes those can get a little bit heavy and, you know, a kid might feel left out, like they're not participating in the decision-making. I think this game does a good job of allowing a child or, you know, somebody that's younger to feel like they're really participating in everything that's going on.
I really agree with that, just because when we've played with our kids, sometimes you'll get stuck in a room and you can't get out and you have to have somebody come help you. And I think our kids really enjoy that aspect of the game where they feel like they're making their own decisions and it's to help, you know, their dad or their sister out. And they help. They know that they've had a part in, you know, defeating the big monster, whatever
yeah.
it's called.
Yeah, so, the ghosts.
Yeah,
these ghosts are really, really cool little figures. And I think what's so cool about this cooperative game is that it has, I know the Ghostbuster version has two different levels of difficulty. And I think that a very good kids game or a game that is trying to challenge kids will give you two different options with the way that you play. That makes me think about a game called Kodama that I've reviewed for the site before. Kodama has these cards called Sprout cards. And if your child is playing with you and maybe they don't understand the concept or maybe they just need a little help, these Sprout cards even the playing field and allow your kid to score points like some of the adult counterparts at the table. And I think that's cool, like getting kids in the action and making them feel like they have a place at the table
yes,
is really
definitely.
Important.
Definitely.
Right, and the adult not feeling like we're not going to like try to destroy a kid in a game and be like, boom, I got you. But being able to like play for real and not have to, like I think a kid can tell when you're faking, you know, trying to keep the game even. It's like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
you know, where'd all those points go? I guess I lost. You know, a kid can tell. So if you're able to play, you know, at least, you know, at a decent level and the kid is able to play at a decent level and the results come out to where they are somewhat near each other, I think that's good for a kid's game.
That's right.
Some other ones that you guys, you know, you guys have so many, a lot of good kids games to me have awesome art and you guys have a lot like that. I think Food Fighters was one that I played with you. I think I've played it with you guys. I get everything a little mixed up, but that one was one that had awesome art and kind of looked really exciting.
Yeah, Rick, I think you have played Food Fighters with us before. I remember that. Food Fighters by Kids Table Board Gaming is an awesome game, especially because it's got like vegetables versus the meats, and the kids really like that aspect of it. And you know, that you'll have like a broccoli head with an angry face or a turkey leg, you know, with like a downturned mouth. And they have little thought bubbles above their head, and like the turkey leg will have a thought bubble for the cabbage. And so you know that that's who you can fight on the opposing side. And you roll dice, you get splats. You can roll for beans, which help you to buy cards that give you special abilities, like the little cracker that you can use so that they have to attack you twice to actually take you over, or the little spoon that lets you attack anybody you want to on the other side. And so I love the fact, too, that it's a two-player game because the kids just, you know, they don't have to wait a long time to get to play their part again. So the kids have really enjoyed that. And actually, this is one of my favorite games just to play with Ryan. So
yeah,
it's good
yeah.
for adults as well. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll be sitting there drinking coffee on a Saturday morning, and we'll bust out a couple games of Food Fighters because it's a lightweight game. It's something that, you know, waking up or after dinner, just sit down and play and chill and have a good time. And it's a great kids game because the art, the illustrations and just the components are so cool. Yeah. The little beans that it comes with and the spoons that you put in the hands of all the characters. It's such a great game, and Kids Table Board Gaming does a great job of catering to kids but not dumbing it down. You know what I mean?
It's actually a very competitive game, and if I play with one of the kids and I lose, I don't want to stop. I want to keep playing until I win, so it's actually very competitive, and they feel the same way.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I've heard similar things for you guys for, like, Ninja Camp, I think. I've heard of some pretty intense matchups between Ryan and Josiah when it comes to Ninja Camp.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Ninja Camp, I gave Josiah Ninja Camp last year for Christmas. It's just fun. It's you're laying out these tiles. You make this board that is, it almost reminds me, the board reminds me a little of something like Forbidden Island, where pieces of the board end up going missing as you play the game. And you're scoring points by taking moves off of these different tiles. And it gets really competitive because everybody's got three characters that they're moving around the board. So you're hitting each other, you're smacking each other, getting in each other's way intentionally. And it gets really competitive. I've seen Josiah set up the game and played with one of his friends. I think we did a live stream last year for International Tabletop Day. One of his friends was over hanging out with us, and the two of them going up against me. We had a blast. And the kids, it's a game that the kids can set up quick enough that you don't need adult supervision. You don't need somebody to say, well, remember this rule, remember this, do this. You know, it's quick and easy to set up for a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kid to play.
Well, I mean, we've got a bunch more on this list. I know, you know, being one board family, a big thing that we're trying to do is encourage people to play games with their family. And I mean, we could sit here and talk for days about games that we've played. But I think, you know, there's a couple card games, there's some things we've mentioned. A big thing also, dexterity games, I think, are a pretty good go-to when it comes to trying to get the kids involved. But yeah, there's so much stuff on our site that's we've even got a section for reviews dedicated specifically to kid-friendly games.
Yes.
Exactly.
So anybody that wants to check those things out can see those on our website, oneboardfamily.com. Well, I think we're going to take a break, and then we're going to be telling you about even more games, getting into our Mechanics Corner.
So we are back, and on Mechanics Corner this week, we are talking about worker placement games. It's a mechanic that we see in a lot of different games, from small games to larger games, but it's a mechanic that you're essentially taking either a meeple or a character or a piece of a game, and you are drafting, you're getting a resource, or you're doing a certain action by placing that worker or whatever it is that game's calling for to do that action or to get that piece. Rick, what are some games that you know of that have that worker placement action?
Yeah, I mean, worker placement is kind of, when I think of board games, you know, a game with a board with pieces, worker placement is the kind that I usually think of. I actually just played a worker placement game last night for the first time. We played Above and Below, which I borrowed from you whenever I came over last weekend.
That's right.
We went over to our friends' houses. Our friends bought a new house, and so we were the first people they had over to over there. And they were like, "We forgot to ask you guys to bring games. Did you bring something?" I was like, "Oh, of course, I brought something."
you don't go places without games.
Right.
Yes, there's always a bag in my car. But we played Above and Below, which is one I've been really interested in because it has worker placement. You have literal workers that are on tiles, and they have five different actions that they can take during a round. And there's seven rounds. You take as many actions as you can during that round, and then once everybody's out of turns, then you move to the next. And your workers have to rest so that they can work again. It also has a cool mechanic where you go on adventures, exploring this cave system. And so there's a book of stories, and so you read from the stories, and they have two options usually, and you have to decide which one you're going to take and do some dice rolling to see if you're successful. It's really fun. A big part of worker placement games is the idea of, I think I've heard it called points salad before, where there's lots of different ways to get points. So you may choose, like, I'm going to get a bunch of buildings, or I'm going to get a bunch of workers, or I'm going to really advance in my item collection, and Above and Below has that. We played, it took us a little longer than I thought it was going to. I started to feel really guilty because they were like, we need to go around 9, and it hit 9:30, and I was like, I'm so sorry. But Sarah won, so I might actually get to play this game again sometime. So,
she'll give you another chance.
Yes. So it was one that, I really enjoyed, and was glad you guys were able to let me borrow it.
I think a good worker placement game will do exactly what you said. Worker placement games give you variety when you play. I know a game that I really enjoyed that a friend of mine has, Lords of Waterdeep. That's actually a game that ended up making it on the Christmas list for this year on One Board Family. Lords of Waterdeep is a great worker placement game. It's a lot of fun, not too hard to teach, but it's set in the D&D universe. So you can pull people in who enjoy role-playing games and things like that, and kind of introduce them to a board game that they may not have played before. And Lords of Waterdeep is definitely a very worker placement game. You've got a crew of people who are either doing quests, or you're putting them out there to collect an army, or whatever resources you need to complete quests and to complete different things and claim pieces of the city. It's a really great game, and one that I definitely want to play again, because the last time we played, Aaron kicked our tail.
Oh, yeah. But that was like 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago. We need to play again, because I want to kick your tail again.
Oh, it was almost a year ago.
Was it? Yeah. I thought it was longer than
that. It was the last game that our friend Hong played with us before he left.
Yeah.
Yep.
We should really try to find that game. Like Rick was saying, you get a lot of variety with worker placement games. But Harbor, for instance, we love playing Harbor. We've had it for a couple years now. And it's a game where you're trying to gain goods, and then the market is shifting, and then you want to sell your goods at the optimum time so that you can make the points that you need. But the only thing is, you have certain cards that are placed out, and you can place your worker on that card to do that action, but you can't, for the next turn, you have to go to a different card. You can't choose to take the same action two turns in a row. And so if there's really nothing good out there, it gets kind of tricky, because sometimes you have to pay someone to go on their card, and you might not have the money that you need. But Harbor's awesome because there's a lot of strategy behind it. And I like the aspect of it to where the market's shifting all the time, and other people have the ability to control the market depending on what they buy. And so you never know. You could be saving up towards something, and then somebody could buy at the turn before you and shift the entire market. So if you've gotten your fish way up there, and your fish is at the top of the market, and then someone buys something and the fish goes all the way down, you've just wasted all of those turns. But it's very competitive. It's very strategic. And it's a tiny little game. Like, I could, you know, for date night, I could just throw it in my purse and we could take it to Starbucks and set it out and play it. So it's for 1 to 4 players. Now, I don't know how it's for one player. I have not tried that before. But I'm sure it would be fun. But anyway, Harper's a great game.
Solo gaming is something that we don't do very much of. But there is a rule set in there for solo play, which, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I played Harbor with you guys, for the first time. Like, I think one of the first few times I headed over, I think that's one of the most like fun density, like the amount of fun you can have in the size of the box. Like, Harbor is really small box, but there's a lot going on for such a tiny little box.
It really is.
And it's a pretty solid game that it's kind of unassuming. Like, there's this thing I think sometimes with games like that where you're like, oh, it's a small box, you know, it's not going to be deep enough, we're not going to have enough fun. And it's like, no, you guys, yeah, I promise you will. It's going to be a lot of fun. I like that game a lot.
Yes.
Speaking of games that you may not know what's in the box until you get into it, we bought a game called Vikings on Board. What was it? About a year, a little
yeah,
over a year
it
ago.
We got Game Fest, didn't we?
No, oh, okay. We purchased it last Christmas, and it was one of those games that I saw online that it went super cheap for like 24 hours. I grabbed it as quick as I could just because the artwork on the box, I was like, man, this is going to be a great kids game. Aaron and I'll sit down on a Saturday morning and we'll learn how to play, and then we'll teach the kids, because this is definitely going to be one that our family will play.
And the pieces are so cool because they're actual ships. Like they're, three-dimensional. They're really cool.
Yeah. The quality and the components in this game are phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's made by Blue Orange Games. And we get into the game, and it is the most cutthroat, you, stab you in the back game that I've ever played.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you get mad at people playing this game, like legitimately mad. Yeah.
Remember how we were talking about kids' games? This is not a kids' game. We thought that this would be a great game for our kids to play. We played the first game, and we ended up mad at each other. And we were like, well, I guess the kids aren't going to play this, and I guess we don't need to either.
And it's a difficult game. Like, it took me a few turns to really wrap my head around what I was supposed to be doing.
And that's it's a worker placement game. You're placing, everybody has control over a certain number of Vikings, and you're placing your Vikings doing certain moves and trying to, undermine other people and get either launch their ship or take away things from them or load goods onto a ship of yours. It's really, really, honestly, it's a great game. It's the most underrated game that came out in 2016 in my book. It's definitely a game that I would purchase again, and every once in a while I try to convince Erin to play. She says no, but I think she'll play it again one day.
I'll come around. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I'm going to throw you completely for a curve because I just found one that we didn't put on our list, but I know is a personal favorite of yours, Ryan, and that is Pursuit of Happiness.
Oh, yes.
I know you love
Pursuit
that game.
Pursuit of Happiness.
That's probably one of your favorites. That's the one you always want to play.
I really enjoy it. It reminds me of the Game of Life, but with a European twist on it. And instead of placing workers like people, you're placing your time. So everybody gets, I think it's 5 or 6 time tokens. And you're placing time in different areas of life. You can take on hobbies, you can date, you can get a job. And each of these things is taking a portion of your life. And then eventually you die.
I will say, the
game over, you're dead.
Yeah. The job card, like the job portion, takes a lot of your time tokens. I just thought about that.
Just like real life.
Yeah. That was one I saw on your shelf the other day. And I was like, that's one I think next time I come over, we need to bust out because I've never played it still.
We need to definitely play that.
Yeah. I'm excited about that.
That's one of those games that, as soon as I get done playing it, it's only about a day until I think about the game again. And then I'm like, I wonder when I'm going to get to play that again.
Yeah. I think you guys had mentioned, we've talked a little bit. Atlanta Game Fest is a place that we all went to that kind of we got introduced to a lot of games all at once. And one of those that we saw last year was Fabled Fruit. And I think it's kind of a good one for this podcast because I think it also crosses into that kids games that don't suck category. Fabled Fruit is kind of, it's odd. It's a worker placement / legacy game.
And also set collection.
Yeah. And so it kind of all comes together where you've got animals that do different actions. So you place your pawn on that animal to take an action, and you're working to collect these fruits and then turn them into smoothies, I believe. When you play it and
the fruits, not the animals.
Yes, don't turn the animals into smoothies. That's a different game. Whenever you're done with the game, you write down, like, because as you go through, there's only, as you collect the fruits, there's only certain numbers of them out on the board, and when they're gone, you replace them with a different type. And so as the game progresses, each time you play, there will be different things out there, and you keep building and building until you get back around to the beginning of the game. I could have completely butchered the description of that game, and to whoever created it, I'm sorry if I did. But it was one that we enjoyed. And I think for a family that's looking at something that I think there is a cool element of something that you play as a family together and you see it progressing together. We do that with Pandemic Legacy, and that's been one that I've super enjoyed, one of my favorite games, because, you know, it's Sarah and I have a story with that. I think that's kind of something that would be a cool little thing to have with your family.
Yeah, Fabled Fruit is one of those games that every once in a while I'll see it go on sale and I'll say, man, I really want to get that game. It was such a good experience playing that with you and the kids at Atlanta Game Fest, and the game morphs and changes and grows as you play more. It's really, really cool. And then other worker placement games that we haven't even mentioned yet, some classics like Agricola and Viticulture. I've got a game called Dungeon Pets that I bought. I thought it was going to be a game for the kids. Looked like a game that would be great for the kids, you know, taking care of your little dungeon monster and selling it.
I mean, you really kind of bought that for Emily and Kendall.
I really did. I bought it for the kids. And then I was like, oh, it's going to take about 2.5 hours to play. Yeah. It's a worker placement game. It's still sitting on our shelf, unused. And then we've got Stone Age, and we talked about Harbor. There's so many good worker placement games, and it's a mechanic that I know our family really enjoys. So
yeah, and it's one that it's a little bit more to it than like a, you know, dexterity games or even set collection that we've done in the past. But I think if you're looking for a what you might think of as a board game experience, this is kind of one of those categories that you're going to want to get into. And in our next segment, I am actually going to be sharing a worker placement game that I kind of like Dungeon Pets. I owned it for a really long time and finally was able to bust it out a few weeks ago, and I want to tell you about that.
Excellent. Let's take a break, and we'll be back in just a minute. Back, and this week we have a review from Rick. What's up, Rick? What kind of game do you have for us this week?
All right, this week I'm going all the way back to the year 2010 to talk about a game released by Queen Games called Fresco. Now, I think it was last year, maybe even the year before. Amazon loves to do their Black Friday sales, and anybody that follows board games
knows that.
Yes. And if you follow board games and you follow Amazon, you probably realize that Queen Games does crazy stuff on Amazon from time to time, where games will just get so cheap that you're like, I can't not buy this right now.
I just picked up Kingdom Builder for $8.
Yes. I did too. Yes. And Queen Games also makes probably my favorite game, or second, it's in the top five, Escape. So when I saw this, they had the Fresco Big Box, which normally sells for $73 on sale for $27.
That's ridiculous.
And I was like, you will be mine. and so I bought it, and it came, and it's by far the largest box that I have as a board game.
So Rick, tell me about Fresco. It's an art game. What do you do, and how does this fit into our worker placement talk?
So Fresco involves you being an artist tasked with painting the ceiling at the cathedral, and so you are using your apprentices behind
it's
a little
apprentice-eye.
Apprentice-eye. I apologize. I forgot that part of English class. But you're using your apprentices to select from five actions at the beginning of the round. Now, when you're selecting those, they're all behind a screen. So each player has just a little board behind a screen where they place their meeples on the different actions that they want to take. And then there's also an element where you pick who gets to go first, and it impacts you actually pick what time you're waking up. So you can either wake up, I think, anywhere between 5 a.m. and 9 a.m. And the earlier you wake up, you get to go first in each action. But because you woke up your little apprentice eye so early, they're unhappy. And if you reach a certain level of unhappiness, you lose a worker. So it kind of has a cool balance mechanic there. But yeah, you go around and everybody takes their actions at each stage or each little area of the board. And you're trying to get the most points through painting. And yeah, it's a pretty straightforward worker placement game.
That's very cool. So, Rick, how does the painting work? I know I've played a couple different painting games and a couple different art games. Does it work with colors, or is it different pieces of artwork that you're putting in there, or how does the art tie into the theme?
So, one of your stations is the market. That's actually the first station. So you'll go out and buy your paint at the beginning of the day, and so the paint's represented by little cubes. Of the different colors, red, blue, and yellow. And then you can mix those paints as an action to get bigger cubes for the secondary colors, purple, green, and orange. And so then you kind of collect your paint, you keep it behind the screen as well, and you are trying to get a combination of paint cubes to paint parts of the fresco that is the cathedral. So the cathedral is actually, I believe, 25 squares that each have different colors on the back. So it might have a purple dot, a blue dot, and a red dot. And that means you need a cube for each of those three colors to be able to paint that section. And they have different point values based on the different types of paint you have to use. So that's part of your painting process, is that you're collecting the right paints to be able to paint the different sections of your fresco.
That's cool. Okay. So are you painting the same, I guess, are you flipping over these different tiles as you meet the requirements, or how does that work?
Yeah. If you get the paint that you need, that's one of your workers can be placed on the chapel section, and your action would be to paint part of the chapel. And so you basically take the tile, the 25 tiles that cover a part of the board, and that board has like this very Renaissance looking painting underneath it. So as you're removing the tiles, it looks like you're painting sections of the fresco.
Okay, gotcha. So that makes sense. Yeah.
And so you put those tiles in front of you, and you will they'll be worth points at the end of the game.
Excellent. So how many players does this support, and what's the age range to you?
This is 2 to 4 players, and I would definitely say it's not complicated. You're doing the same thing every turn, but I would think that it does require you to think, 3 to 4 turns ahead. Some kids can do that. Some kids, if your kid's one that it's their turn and that's when they start to think about what they're going to do that turn, it might not be up their alley. But we played it with my brother-in-law and his girlfriend. At first, to like most worker placement games, it takes a bit of time to explain. But as we started to play it, they're like, this wasn't as complicated as I thought. And then like a week later after playing that, his girlfriend bought Fresco for him for his birthday. So I guess they enjoyed it because they went out and got a copy themselves.
That's excellent. That's actually, somebody suggested that I look into Fresco because I played this game called The Gallerist that has these worker placement mechanics in it. And it's a really, really good, deep game that comes in this gigantic box that's the size of a small table. And I can't get that game out of my head, but somebody mentioned that I should probably I should check out Fresco to see if that's a better, a cheaper way to get into that same mechanic and some of the things that the Gallerist did so well. So I'll definitely have to check that one out and play with you next time I see you.
Oh, definitely. It's a, you'd have to play it when you come with me because it barely fits in my car. The box is so big.
You can just strap it to the roof. You yes. won't look like a big nerd.
No, definitely not.
All right, that'll do it. Rick, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. Next week, we actually have a little bit different of a show, so you'll have to stay tuned for the little surprise guest that we're going to have on the show next week.
And so excited.
Until then, have fun gaming.
You should shake. Let's play a game round one time where it's like, I will shake the box and you tell me.
You tell me what game this
is. That could be our April Fool's episode. We're going to play, yes. What box is this? I will shake the box.